You are listening to 97.3 LPFM, and this is Open Source RVA. Open Source RVA is WRAR's weekly audio news digest. Today, we discuss lies and politics with our panel of politicos, Jamie Radke, Charles Deardorff, and Paul Goldman. And we talk about the forthcoming Record Store Day with Jim Bland of Plan 9, Marty Key of Steady Sounds, and Chris Pittman of Deep Groove. But first, here are some of the top stories making headlines right now.
We'll be voting on...
The Virginia Board of Health today approved abortion clinic regulations, requiring them to make their facilities up to hospital building standards. In an 11-2 vote, the Board of Health approved the legislation that was passed in the General Assembly back in 2011. Pro-choice activists like Jeff Winder says the new requirements will be too costly to existing abortion clinics, so they will be forced to shut down.
And the result will be that women in Virginia, many will be denied access to abortion services because although it's legal, they won't have access to affordable clinics.
President of the Family Foundation, Victoria Cobb, a supporter of the regulations, say it will protect women's health and so...
So we believe this is the better outcome for Virginia women.
A one-hour public comment was allowed, with opinions for and against the new measures about equal. But one thing that Board of Health member James Edmondson says was not equal was the amount of politics involved.
99.99%, it's politically driven.
For RVA Open Source, I'm Cameron Vigliano.
For Open Source RVA, I'm Amy Daniel. Richmond schools officials have long maintained that the $2.1 million annual cost of their prestigious International Baccalaureate program meant they simply couldn't afford to expand the program. But with the promise of $500,000 additional dollars from Mayor Dwight C. Jones for just that purpose, the district is proposing an ambitious expansion of its program at Lucille Brown Middle. Problem is, the Richmond IB program has never cost that $2.1 million to operate. The real cost, according to a recent Richmond Magazine report, is closer to $214,000, with the million-plus balance reflecting the cost to pay salaries of teachers who also teach non-IB classes. But even after the cost shrinks by 90%, questions remain about whether it's money well spent. Richmond's two IB programs have graduated fewer than 15 students in 4 years, and the program is still $25,000 more than the IB program in Hanover County, which is available at 4 high schools. That program graduates between 40 and 50 students yearly. Mayor Jones' proposed $500,000 IB expansion has yet to receive City Council approval. In the meantime, Richmond officials point out that their expansion proposal remains in the planning stages and that it may evolve as the school board makes tweaks. Extra fresh omelet lovers alike will be happy with City Council's decision this Monday to allow Richmond City residents to raise their own chickens. The high-profile fight for urban chickens drew a crowd. Two people, one of whom was Fan District Association President Roger Whitfield, spoke out against keeping these feathered friends within city limits, but many more came to cluck with approval. Some rules will apply, of course, including a $60 yearly permit fee and the possibility of surprise inspections. The 20th annual James River Film Festival is already underway and continues through April 17th. Highlights of the James River Film Society's annual event, which showcases vintage gems as well as the latest in the avant-garde, will include a screening of rare 1940s Superman cartoons as well as a newly restored print of Harold Lloyd's silent comedy, Safety Last, on Saturday at the Grace Street Theater. On Sunday, you can watch a new print of Stanley Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove and a 33mm presentation of John Huston's underrated 70s boxing flick, Fat City. There will also be experimental movies from Richard Myers, Russian stop-motion animation, video shot by the late Richard Carillon, and a documentary on the proto-punk band Death. For a complete schedule of screenings and events, go to jamesriverfilm.org.
Touch of scandal. It's as familiar a scent to Richmond politics as the gentle whiff of mimosas in May.
We're a bit early in the calendar. The dogwoods aren't yet in bloom, and the shad have yet to run on the James, but the heavy buds of scandal are near to bursting in Richmond. With so much Bacchanal dancing and merriment in the political garden of good and evil, it's time again to add the pundits to the dance cards. And so, I welcome today Paul Goldman, Charlie Diridor, and Jamie Radke, former head of the Virginia Tea Party. And everybody knows Paul by this point. He's the former head of the Virginia Democratic Party, and Charlie Diridor, a frequent commenter on Richmond politics, which we have a lot to talk about today. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Let's start, I guess, small. We'll start with the small fry. Shonda Harris Muhammad, doctor. Shonda Harris
Muhammad. Don't say doctor.
Shonda Harris Muhammad, for those who don't know, was a recently elected school board member. She's graced us with her presence on this show. Was a very entertaining and interesting guest, and took some important stands, I think, on some issues. But Dr. Muhammad has somewhat exaggerated her credentials, as revealed in reports on Channel 6 over the last couple of days. She does not have a doctorate. And the school board chair, Jeffrey Bourne, has come out not necessarily in defense of her, but not necessarily critical of her. And it looks like Charlie already has something to say. Let's hear it, Charlie.
No. I was just
no. You got to go for it.
This is typical. And the question I have is twofold, and it's for all of us here tonight. One, if people who've lived here long enough remember 2005, there was a school board member who bared his chest on, I believe it was Craigslist, to try to get dates.
This is Steve Johnson.
Well, that was better than Wiener, I guess.
Well, and
so former school board chair.
Speaking of comebacks, and
Wiener, of course, was a senator and
okay,
Congress.
I'm trying to make a point here.
Okay, let's hear your point.
You guys are making seventh grade humor out of
Is it worse
to take your shirt off to try to get a date or to lie about getting a doctorate to the voters?
In other words,
and that's a true question. And then secondarily, has Jeff Bourne tripped in his first real curtain up appearance?
Moment of leadership or call for leadership. Who wants to start on this one? Paul?
Well,
Jamie? This is politics as usual in some ways.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I think that we'll see what happens with her, I guess, in her reelection, how people respond to it. Obviously, it's very
I'm hate to interrupt you, but should she face reelection or should she resign?
Well, there could definitely be a call to have her resign.
That's why I asked the question the way I asked it. Mr. Johnson, I believe.
Stepped down.
But that wasn't over the shirt. I think that's because he was caught
with marijuana at an airport.
Oh, I forgot about the marijuana.
He had a laundry list of.
I apologize. I forgot about the marijuana at the airport.
If you'd been in Colorado, been
quote
totally
of the night.
That's where he was headed.
Medical.
But I mean, when do we? And Paul, you're the historian here. I yield to you on this. When do we start asking our politicians to be having a modicum of honesty?
Well, and this one's an interesting too because it's a school board post.
Right? Well, let's remember we used to have an appointed school board in Richmond, and Wilder got the legislature to pass a law allowing localities to go to an elected school board. If this had been an appointed school board, I think she probably would be gone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there'd be any. Assuming it's true. She hasn't denied it.
Her district rep would have asked for her to tender her resignation.
I would think that there'd be a lot of pressure on the city council, and the council person from her district would have had to appoint her would feel like, look, I got to protect myself, okay? And they would be able to say, look, I mean, you basically, we relied on your resume, and I think they could have. Number two, it would have also been only a two-year appointment. One of the problems here is a four-year appointment. And it does, again, gets to the issue of whether the two-year term would have been better in the sense that it seems to give the public a little chance, but that being aside, this is an elected situation. And to some extent, you'd say on the political side of things, well, that's up to the voters, but she doesn't face the voters.
So should
she step down? 2006. Let's The second question is why this is, and I think why Bourne, you know, really hurt himself, and is that this was a question of values. This is a question of education, and you have a situation where you have a member of the school board who, instead of working hard and doing the things, earn your grades, which you tell the kids everything, what happens? Well, I just decide to become a doctorate. You know, it's like Doc Holliday in the Wyatt Earp movies. I mean, anybody can call himself.
He can pull teeth, though. Right?
Well, that's anyway, those days, who's to say? He liked to drink, so he was a doctor. Okay, that's cool. The thing is, the
messy signature.
And so you ask yourself, you know, what does the school board need to do? It would be easier, of course, if she were to do whatever she thinks she's going to do. But that, even if she does, what happened with Bourne, I think, and why it has many people scratching their head, this is a system that I helped expose a couple years ago, was misrepresenting the SAT scores.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? Took forever and to find out that, oh, well, they were purposely doing that to make it look better. This is a group that
it's
has...
It's not the first. I had suspensions, and I had the IB.
All this stuff,
and
right?
It so they're making, like it's, they're it's making an up, easy fishing trip.
They're making up that. They're just making up those
easy
numbers.
Easy fishing expedition.
Now you got all the double dippers, and they're violating the rules there because they want to have their friends, okay, proving that it's more of a employment zone.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have the school board here, and somebody does something like this, and not a single member of the school board has called for her resignation.
That's right.
The school board hasn't. The other eight haven't met.
That's right.
The other, no one said, you know, Mr. Bourne, I mean, her vote made you the chair. So, I mean, come on here. But to me, the issue is even bigger than the politics of the education. The issue is simple. There is no, and I will say that, well, maybe no's too strong, so I'll come back. Almost none.
Okay.
Almost no real compassion and interest in improving the education of these African-American youngsters. We have a system that serves overwhelmingly poor African-American youngsters. For years, people have been able to get away saying, well, you know, the real problem is the white segregationists and all that. And they've stuffed it all off on that. Those days are gone, okay? Nobody's apologizing for those days, and a lot of us helped to get rid of them, okay? That's gone. We're in a new era. We're in a new era here.
So how do you hold accountable politicians?
Well, that's the question, Paul.
It's very simple. I was getting to that. I was getting to how you hold it accountable.
Get to it quick.
There's only one community of people in Richmond who can hold them accountable, and that is the African American middle class.
Well, it has to be the parents too. I mean,
it's the cancer of those schools.
Well, Jamie, go on. It has to
be
the parents.
It has to be the parents. You know, when you think about the fact that she has a number of years left to serve on this board, and we do, I agree with you, we do lack virtue in our politicians. I mean, it's just virtue and ethics is out the door, and these politicians will come back, resurrect themselves from the dead, like
we've
seen
nationally.
They're
out for themselves, and they're not out for
the people.
But
the thing is that may be true, but if you don't like it, it has to be the people who are voting these people back in, knowing where they were, what they've done. And she would not be able to continue to stay on the school board if the public outcry was big enough. And the school board members would be forced to call for the resignation, to call for something to be done, if the public outcry was enough. And we've seen it, you saw it with all sorts of candidates, national, state, and local, that when the parents get charged up, when the local community gets charged up, the pressure is so big that they either feel like they have to resign, the school board members start putting the pressure on these, you know, the person to resign, and they end up leaving. But if people aren't going to take interest in their own backyard and they're not going to care, it's a lot to ask others to care. And that's what you really have to have, is you've got to have the public outcry to drive the change.
So you're saying the public should lead and the politicians should follow?
Absolutely. They're the voters. They're the ones voting them in.
But aren't we getting to me, the bigger issue is why is this permitted? Why is there no outcry? Why? And you could argue, well, people are cynical as to the level of the politics is another. But that's only one out of nine.
Mm-hmm. Paul, the story only broke a couple of days ago.
But my point is, there's only even it's still only one out of nine. No one's saying all nine people lied about their resume. You got the mayor. No one's saying he's not a minister. Okay. And so the point is, they're not all lying. All right, this is one person. It does happen. No question about it. No excuse. But it's the other eight don't react. And then the question is, why don't the other eight react? And what I'm trying to say is that in the end, the school system is not, in my mind, the city of Richmond. And I got a lot of good teachers and a lot of good schools and a lot of dedicated people. But it's more of an employment agency than it is an educational agency. There is just people are writing off these children. Nobody wants to hear it, but that is why you, and when you have that mindset, you send them to a school in a landfill. Well, that's okay. You have double dipping. Well, you know, we need these people. You know, you have, there's always an excuse because there's no burning passion to say, look, kids first.
But you have to have people advocating, too. I believe it was Henry Marsh went on and objected to charter schools for the city of Richmond. And his reasoning was that too many people wanted to be in one.
Actually, his reasoning was they were fine for the rest of the state, but not Richmond.
So, I mean, you don't even have your own representatives.
Well, but even
in the African-American community, fighting for
things. But even if you did. You can only have two charter schools in any location. Anyway.
We need to get to one last thing, and we only have about 2 minutes to do it in. And it has to do with where Shonda Harris Muhammad is not right now, which is on a trade mission to China.
probably wish
which she was to us.
Which leads us to the governor, who is headed on a trade mission to China to get away from Stargate. Star Scientific, which was revealed in the Washington Post not too many days ago. I guess it was last week. And this was this question of his daughter's wedding reception at the mansion and some checks that were written here and there and a donation from Star Scientific. I forget the executive's name. He's a former tobacco executive now making a dietary supplement. And this is exciting stuff right now. The Washington Post and the Times-Dispatch now in the game are breaking stuff left and right. And Charlie looks like he's about to implode.
You couldn't make this stuff up. Right, Paul? I mean, you just can't make this kind of stuff up.
Let's start with Jamie on this one because we've let Paul start everything so far. Jamie, what are your thoughts on this? This is – never seen anything like it. Although I guess
well,
we
I don't know
sadly.
That I'd say that. This is politics. We see stuff like this all the time. That's part of the problem. We were just talking about virtue.
That's why there's so many trade missions to China, right?
You know, there's just a level of disgust that you mentioned that I had co-founded the Tea Party in Virginia, and I know that they often get branded as sort of being the arm of the Republican Party, but there is a level of disgust and discontent with a lot of the cronyism that you see and favors that happen, frankly, in both parties. And you know, I know that they've both said that both Governor McDonald as well as Ken Cuccinelli, I saw in the paper, both said that they would be advocates of greater transparency. But all we needed Bob to do was follow the actual current transparency laws. We didn't necessarily need new ones. We just needed him to demonstrate that he had indeed received those funds, which obviously he didn't do. And he says that the donation was to his gift, of which
That's
I say
daughter.
That when my two daughters get married, I want to have a friend that will give me my daughter a $15,000 wedding gift. I need to have friends like that.
Or a recent friend.
Well, he was his friend. He was his friend for a couple of days. You remember this out mm-hmm. of the story? Mm-hmm. He was his friend for a couple of days, and then all of a sudden, he had just known him a year. And I don't know the guy that well. Who do you not know that well that gives your daughter $15,000? And by the way, the money didn't go to the daughter. The money went to, I think, the catering company. And McDonald actually wrote checks to the catering company for the down payment.
$8,000 down payment.
Yeah, down payment on this. So, I mean, I didn't know anything. Come on, guys. Come on.
Paul?
Based on what happens with these things, we can expect more than less.
Yeah.
That's one reason the governor's defense was so lame and basically counterproductive. big misstep by the governor and his staff. I think they got to call for a special session of the General Assembly. I think the governor should take that lead if he has any sense. Virginia follows the rules of disclosure. We basically buy the Justice Brandeis argument that you be transparent, tell us what you get. We don't care where you get it. Now, other places say, wait a minute, there ought to be some things you can get. Even if you tell us, that's not enough. Or maybe Virginia has to ban certain kinds of gifts for the first time, not just require more
And now part exposure. Of the issue here is it's who you have to disclose for, right?
And so I'm saying you could expand the disclosure. That's one way to go. Well, just tell us more. But that's been the Virginia tradition. Disclosure.
Well, and it strikes me this is not that dissimilar from Congress recently took this up. We had another Virginia connection with Eric Cantor.
But they tend to, but other places will tend to ban it. Instead of just saying, okay, you get $25,000 from this person as long as you tell us we're happy with it, other places have said, no, you shouldn't be able to get it. We haven't gone that route. We may have to go a little bit of that route. But clearly, there's a serious problem when the governor, and let's say something else. Historically, this is very rare. If you go back, you can't really think of, I'm trying to think of a time when a governor got in this kind of mess over money connected with the mansion, with his picture on their website. There's a connection here, a commercialization of the governorship that we really haven't seen before. And I think there's more to it here. And the governor has to get ahead of this with something dramatic. Or he could come back from China not wishing he was staying here.
In China. Now, real quick, because we do have to wrap this up. Where is this going? Where might this scandal go? Let's start in the middle with Charlie.
I'm not a lawyer, but I would think that
that's not a good opener.
I would think.
No, that's a great opener.
I'm not a doctor.
And I don't even play one on TV. But be quick. I don't think that Ken Cuccinelli would open an investigation or call for a special prosecutor, but I'd like to see an investigation at least from the Attorney General's office into this thing.
Jamie?
Well, I think that they need to call greater transparency. I don't know that there's been any connection, that there was any benefit, legislative benefit or anything given to, unless I'm not up on the news.
I think before this donation.
So there's no... I don't know that there's a connection that he received anything for his donation. To me, the biggest issue, and maybe future things will unveil
it's called access.
But I do agree, though, that just it overall, the principle of the corporate cronyism that we see that goes on, you know, when you have big government get in bed with big business, it's a messy combination, no matter who's doing it. And the biggest thing is they just messed up. I mean, you got it. Like Paul said, we have very, very simple rules here in Virginia. You just got to say what you get.
But is there an easy way out of it, or where is this heading?
Well, I believe that he's going to have to. Well, being in China is probably the easiest way for him to get out of it right now. But I think that the biggest thing is that if there are any other things, that they need to be very proactive in moving forward and detailing any other donations that may have been routed through daughters or
Paul, where's it going on here?
If I were the Republicans, I'd be very, very, I'd be very worried about this. And the reason is because you have both Cuccinelli and McDonald involved. And so there's going to be a lot of reasons for people that don't like either one and reasons for the media to really get into this because you kind of suck them, both of them, into the story. And so if I was advising either of them, I would say that, read my article on Blue Virginia, and realize that you have to get ahead of the story.
Well, and Ken has done that. Well, first of all, he hired an independent counsel.
He's done it to a greater extent than
he's done much he's better. He's done better.
But the problem is it's the comparison, it's the relativeness. Star Scientific is being investigated by the feds. You got investigated by the reporters. Star Scientific was a scam of a company when it was trying to sell cigarettes. It's now got some magical potion that they came up with that's going to cure Alzheimer's. And let's be serious. Do you really think a failed tobacco company just happens to stumble on the compound that's going to cure Alzheimer's? I mean, you couldn't sell this to Hollywood, and they'll buy pretty much anything.
You can't make this stuff up, like I said.
But I do believe, though, that Star Scientific had an appeal before Tim Kaine that sat in front of him for 4 years.
Well,
he did nothing
Warner
with
ultimately,
either,
Governor Warner gave him
so
money.
So it's not just the Republicans.
Well, no one's talking about that. But that's not the issue.
Previous administrations
once you get,
well,
put down a couple of quick rules. Once you get behind the spin, once the press is dominating the story, you have lost. You have to accept that fact. You have to do anything you can to get the spin to change, and it's got to be big. The best thing you can do in a situation like this is to go from, I was trying to skirt the law, I'm going to be the biggest disclosure person in history, toughest laws in history before I leave. That's his best way out.
All right, and that is our episode here for today. I've been with Jamie Radke, former head of the Virginia Tea Party, Charlie Diridor, local, often frequent pundit on issues, Richmond city government, and Paul Goldman, former chairman of the Virginia Democratic Party. And apparently the folks involved in the Stargate should be reading Blue Virginia. Thank you guys again.
Thank you.
Thanks.
By my side, this girl with eyes like gems and reactions to your lies, lies, lies. You can repeat what you were crying. All those things made me cry. You kicked me when I was down, and they hurt me. All those lies, lies, lies.
Richmond Food Not Bombs is an organization that has been serving a free vegetarian community meal in Monroe Park for over 17 years. Anyone is welcome to share the meal every Sunday at 4 p.m. at the corner of Main and Belvedere. It's about solidarity, not charity. If you're interested in donating food, supplies, money, or just helping prepare the meal, you can come out at 12:30 on Sundays to the Wingnut Anarchist Collective at 2005 Barton Avenue. More information is available by calling 804-303-5449 or emailing rvafoodnotbombs@gmail.com. Food is a right, not a privilege.
Music Nerd Alert, Music Nerd Alert, Record Store Day rears its tuneful head next Saturday, April 20th. The annual springtime celebration of the vinyl record is also a tribute to independent music stores across the country, including here in Richmond. The 6th annual Record Store Day will see free giveaways, vinyl rarities, live bands, live DJs, happening in retailers all across the city. We've got Jim Bland, the owner of Plan 9 Records, with us today. Plan 9 is, of course, the long-running music store in Carytown, now at a new location at 3017 West Cary. Plan 9 was an original member of the coalition that started Record Store Day, and the shop has been an active participant ever since. We're joined also by John Berger, the owner of Broad Time, which developed and hosts the Record Store Day website at recordstoreday.com. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
So it's music nerd time again, Record Store Day. How does it feel? Is a lot of preparation, Jim?
Absolutely.
I was just looking at the list of all of the releases that will be coming out on Record Store Day. There's a new album from Wire and a big star documentary soundtrack. All kinds of stuff. Describe, for those who don't know, what is Record Store Day?
Well, Record Store Day was created by a lot of the independent stores that kind of came together under this umbrella to promote, you know, the whole concept of a record store, what it means to its community, These are the people who have been shopping and love collecting music, mm-hmm. vinyl or otherwise. It's mostly vinyl these days, of course. You know, just to celebrate that whole thing, what they do with the community, what the community gives back to that, you know, with that record store.
And what does Plan 9 do usually during Record Store Day? You've got it coming up on April 20th. What's going to be in store?
Well, usually, over most of our years, I'd say, we have live bands playing in the store in the afternoons. The first part of the day is sort of devoted to the shopping frenzy. Everybody trying to, you know, get in line and get the releases that they're really looking for. And they're quite limited, as we were talking about a little earlier.
Right,
you know,
limited edition vinyl.
We may order 50, we get 10, or, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. So
Right.
But the whole vibe is great during the day. The people are really excited about it. They're not really miffed if you don't have the one particular title they're looking for. They'll move to something else. Within our group, we trade with each other after the day.
Oh.
And the guys say, well, hey, I've got 10 of this left, and we've got 5.
Oh, I see.
So we swap some stuff so we can fill some more requests of some of our customers.
Right.
Which has really worked out great.
Well, how did Plan 9 first get involved in Record Store Day? How did this come about? You were one of the original stores, right?
Right. Well, it came out of a group of 3 coalitions, ours being one of them, that's been around about almost 15 years now, I guess.
Mm-hmm. An independent music coalition?
Independent music coalition, right. And there's several of those in various incarnations. But we all collectively put together Record Store Day and actually own Record Store Day.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the chief guys enlisted John here to build a website and host that, get all the information out, which is mm-hmm. quite a job for them as well.
Right, I was surfing that site. That is quite a job, yeah.
And as it gets down to crunch time, trying to put in 300-plus mm-hmm. titles is and cover art and in blurbs about it. But everybody wants to know all that stuff.
Well, how many different stores, John, how many different stores participate in this Record Store Day?
Well, it's interesting. As it's grown through the years, the amount of stores that participate has also grown. The mm-hmm. interest is really with the fans and the artists and the communities. The original impetus maybe behind the day, to give you some perspective, is really to kind of the response of the record store. There's a lot of negative publicity for mm-hmm. record stores mm-hmm. going on.
Well, and going out of business.
Yeah,
know,
right.
You know, and so. It was doom and gloom. And so part of the response was, hey, there's a lot of record stores here that they're doing well. It's a positive story mm-hmm. for the communities that they're in that magnetizes the music lovers to come out and celebrate.
Right.
So the idea was to have this party for music lovers. Mm-hmm. And the overwhelming support from the industry and the artists really came forward to enable it to grow mm-hmm. for those 6 years that it's been going on every single year.
Right.
But to answer your question, there's about 2,500 stores worldwide, internationally, that celebrate all on Record Store Day.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's quite a change, I'm guessing, from the early years?
Yes, it is. In the early years, I think we probably started with about 400 stores.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's so many ways that stores can celebrate. They celebrate, obviously, with the special releases that people are excited, that artists are excited to make to celebrate mm-hmm, the day. Mm-hmm. But they'll have parties and food and right. giveaways and contests, and it's really a way to bring the community out and celebrate.
Right, like Plan 9, I noticed that you have a tribute to Dusty Springfield. It's going to be right. one of your events.
I know.
Sort of a chance fun. To do some special stuff with music programming.
Yeah,
too.
One of our guys, Paul Ivey, put that together, but he's got a bunch of different people who are going to step in and do different songs that uh-huh. their favorites from Dusty Springfield.
Oh, that'll be great.
And then, of course, other bands who do original material like Hotel X and so on.
Right, you'll have Hotel X there all day, right?
Yeah, they're playing a slot later on in the day after the Dusty Springfield thing.
Right. Well, talk a little bit about the bump in record sales that happen during Record Store Day each year. I was told that it's actually been a sort of a boon to the industry.
It certainly is, yeah. I mean, I can speak for us. And
right.
It's, you know, it's due to, even with some financial constraints, we try to get as much as we can, of course, knowing that you're allocating that sort of thing to serve our community.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a little Christmas for us,
yeah.
you know, in the spring. So it's really strong, and it does help us a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are so happy to get. They want that Dylan record, mm-hmm. or they want this Grateful Dead piece, or whatever it is.
Or Black right. Keys, or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they're so excited about it.
Well, I was looking at the list of releases, and you got everything from Best Coast to At the Drive-In to Willie Nelson and Annie DeFranco.
Yeah, Willie Nelson.
So all kinds of artists are represented, not just the indie rock crowd.
Exactly. The major labels did, you know, as John knows, it, you know, they've stepped into it in a bigger way, and You know, some of these things are quite expensive because they're so rare.
Right.
But there's a range of stuff from the new artist to the really, you know, established artists.
Right. Well, this wave of limited edition vinyl has really fueled this with collectors. You were trying to explain this to me before we began the interview. How are these rare pieces of vinyl allocated to the stores? How does that work? It seems like that would be a real, like, stores really jockeying to get these rare.
We know from I don't know how really the major labels do it. We have our own distribution for the coalition, and the things that some artists have done with us, as they do with throughout the year, put out limited edition releases or do their releases through us. Like, it may be they own their own publishing and so forth. They're free to do what they want, and they want to hold on to more of the income, and they'll have us do the distribution for them to a lot of the indie record stores.
Right.
In that case, they take all the allocation, all the orders that come in, and then just and say, we've got orders for 5,000, we only have 2,000. They allocate it based on what the orders were.
Right, so okay. It's a pretty fair, so they kind of tailor make it to the demand in a way.
Yeah, some will do it up to a point, we'll do it with a demand. Otherwise, if it's over ordered for the amount that's pressed, then they allocate it proportionally.
Well, it's a huge, huge list of releases. Did anything catch y'all's eye that particularly looked inviting? I saw a new album by Wire piqued my interest.
Some old favorites keep popping up, like some Big Star you mentioned.
Big Star, and also there's
Bob Dylan.
The Bob Dylan, right? There's a limited edition 45, right?
It's a 7-inch from the Self-Portrait Sessions that was going to be part of the upcoming bootleg series they're going to release.
Released yet. Yeah, and also I saw a reissue of Pink Floyd, See Emily Play on there. So some not just the new music, but a lot of the cooler, older music.
Yeah, I'm always interested to see the Captain Beefheart pop up. You know,
right,
things
right.
Like that, you know.
Unfortunately, no Beefheart this year, though, right?
Yeah, there is one.
Oh, there
this
is?
Year too.
Whoa,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Looks like I'll have to go out to Record Store Day.
As the number of releases have grown, it's special for the day. They've been really able to touch on the genres from pop to the classic rock as well as indie rock.
Right.
And sometimes even blues or jazz.
Well, jazz. And this year there's some on this list that's only to independent stores of a John Coltrane and a Miles Davis.
Right. I also saw Big Mama Thornton album on there.
Vanguard, probably. Yeah, they do some of those limited releases.
How many of those releases do you think that you'll get a reasonable number of copies of? Or any
probably
retailer,
things like the ones
matter.
That are higher, like Mumford & Sons, for instance, which is big for us and big across the country. There'll be a fair number of those out.
Right.
And that's a live thing, so that'll be of interest to their fans because that's the only way you can get it.
But
it's CD and LP release, so
it's both.
So that'll take care of a lot of, you know, a lot of interest in what someone would rather have. Some people don't buy vinyl, for instance.
So this is really an event kind of for hardcore collectors, would you say, in many ways?
No, I would say it's more for hardcore fans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right?
That's
the vein that you're really tapping into is you have a music fan that might not be oriented towards a record store. This is really introducing him to the great experience that some of us have had of being a music fan and having that physical connection to the piece and the physical connection to other music lovers like you in the community.
Right. I always saw this as maybe a really good promotional tour for record stores themselves, which people, like you say, they don't even know they're around anymore unless they keep up.
And it really opens the door. Say, there's this great resource in the community for music. And a lot of that's fueled vinyl. You know, vinyl has grown as Record Store Day has grown. This navigation back to vinyl, people are surprised, really? You know, but there's an audiophile quality to it. There's a physical size quality to it. And often, there's a digital convenience. It'll come with a CD or a download of the music so that you get the best of all worlds.
Do y'all have people camp out at Plan 9 when the day begins?
Yeah,
so they
most
can get
of
those
lines form. Certainly lines form every a little year. Early. And, you know, so they get there. It's usually maybe an hour earlier, that kind of thing. But they definitely want to get in there first. Or if they've been to another store somewhere that opens earlier or later, they've already made plans of where they're going to go.
Right, right.
Try to get...
in fact,
it sort of is a mix of, you know, both the fans and
I pictured a couple guys
thing.
I know are going to be doing this. You know, you mentioned this, you talked about this before, but Plan 9's gone through some changes in recent years. What is the state of the independent music store? You say that the death knell was rung, but yet it still survives, particularly in Richmond.
That's true. And I think that's true in other parts of the country where I talk to you know, friends I know that in our coalitions that are in Portland and Denver and so forth, some of the guys have closed, but you know, some of these stalwarts have hung on as well, and have seen a, you know, you can look at this graph. We had this at one of our meetings. They talk about here's the decline of CD sales, mm-hmm. and the rise of LP sales, but the numbers are quite different. Mm-hmm. But the numbers have picked up in vinyl quite a bit, and you know, for whatever, you know, various reasons and backlash of just a, you know, ephemeral CD, MP3, and that sort of thing. It's really nice to see. We're kind of hit that bottom, I think, of that precipitous decline in CD sales, mm-hmm. where that slowed down, and with the LP sales going up, we're kind of flattening out. Right. And those of us who survived all of that, mm-hmm. you know, have a little bit brighter future.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Record Store Day would be a survivor's tale.
Exactly.
Then.
Right. It would be.
We've been talking to Jim Bland, the owner of Plan 9 Records, and John Berger from Broad Time, which developed the Record Store Day website at recordstoreday.com. You can get more information on Plan 9 and the store schedule for Record Store Day at plan9music.com. Is that right?
That's right.
Thanks for coming by, guys, and happy listening.
Yeah, thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.
Marty Key, one of the co-owners of Steady Sounds, located downtown at 322 West Broad. And joining us is Chris Pittman, who's the vinyl buyer at Deep Groove Records at 317 North Robinson Street in the Fan. Both of these platter-friendly stores have carved out their own devoted clienteles, serving up new and used vinyl. Yes, the format is still alive in Richmond, Virginia. We're talking Record Store Day and what Deep Groove and Steady Sounds have in store for music fans out there next weekend. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Hey, thanks.
Thanks for having us.
This year's ambassador of Record Store Day is Jack White. Any thoughts?
Chris?
Any thoughts on that?
I mean, I think it's a good choice.
It's very good choice because right. he's very he's publicly...
He's pro-vinyl.
A vinyl guy.
Yeah. He has a reissue label.
I don't know Jack White, though, so I don't... Can't really speak.
You can't
to,
give him any
I can't,
personal.
I can't speak to any knowledge of Jack
no personal
White.
Bona fides.
Yes.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean. He basically owns a pressing plant too. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you gotta really love vinyl if you want to open. You know,
that's
like
true.
Buy a pressing plant. But
that's devotion. Yes.
Yeah.
Chris, for those who haven't come down to Deep Groove for Record Store Day, what is it like? What kind of pagan rituals happen there?
Well, people.
Besides
line
the
up.
Deep Groove tote bags.
Yes, Deep Groove tote bags. people line up, and, you know, there's generally, I think last year we had about 70, 75 people at open mm-hmm. in line, which I think...
That's when you open.
A lot for our shop.
That's when you open?
What do you mean, when we open the
yeah,
shop?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, when we open the shop, it's about that many people lined
wow.
up. It was last year, so each year it's grown, so you just kind of never really know what to expect, I think.
What new releases are Deep Groove customers looking forward to? What's some of the things people have earmarked?
The Tame Impala 12-inch, I think, is something people are really
right.
itching for.
And they're coming to town soon, to the National, I believe.
Yep, yeah. In June.
Marty, at Steady Sounds, you're going to have a Record Store Day blowout. You got the Baron...
Oh, it's going to be a blowout.
It's going to be the Baron Girls performing on Friday, the day before, and... Then a special appearance from the Hoax Hunters and the Snowy Owls.
Yes, we're doing a whole, they're going to start out, Baron Girls are going to do the in-store early, and mm-hmm. then there's the DJ night later on the evening at Cezanne.
Oh, okay.
And then we're opening up at midnight because we're insane.
That's right, you're having a midnight madness.
I mean, we're basically the Crazy Eddie of record stores in Richmond, and we're insane, and we're going to open up at midnight.
Right.
And there's going to be free pizza.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about the free pizza. That's probably going
to
be
a that's going to bring a lot of people in. Hey, guess what? You don't have to buy records to get free pizza.
You don't.
Just to let you know.
I'll be
that's
there.
A deal, man.
You don't. That is a deal
that
right
is
there.
A deal.
I'll tell you.
The Hoax Hunters and the Snowy Owls, they actually have a 45. That's
they did a lathe cut split, yeah, which is a lathe cut is basically just like, a limited etched record. Mm-hmm. Like, you basically have to, you have a piece of vinyl and you have to actually etch into it from a lathe.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a limited number of them, and they're going to have them available at the store during the day, during their in-store.
Man.
Yeah.
Both of you, talk about Richmond and why we love vinyl so much. It seems like there are many, many vinyl outlets that you don't see in other cities. Is it just a Richmond thing? Do we just hang on to those retro formats? Or?
Vinyl kind of just exists. I mean, it's just like anything, vintage clothing store, vinyl stores, it's like mom and pop hardware stores, you know? It's just like people just like going, you know, I think generally people like to stay away from the big box stores for anything. But I mean, you know, vinyl is its own niche. It's weird, you know, like it's like vinyl records, you know, like why would I ever want to venture out in the world and buy a vinyl record? Like I can download it at work right now, you know, but you know, people like collecting things and you know, I do too. And people like just searching through bins because, you know, you could go to someone's blog about music and discover all this new stuff. But a lot of times just looking through bins of records is way more interesting. And you'll find like all these weird little things that you never knew existed,
right,
you know.
Right.
And I see it every day, you know, like or I recommend things to people and they're just like blown away. Like, wow, I didn't know this existed, even though something has been available for 20 years or something, you know.
Right, right. Well, Chris, get in on this too. I'm curious about the trends. What are some of the genres and the artists that just won't quit at each of the record stores? Types of music that are kind of always on a sort of an instant sale with customers. What's popular at Deep Groove?
Probably, I would say anything from the psychedelic or soul variation, really. You know, and I think that comes down to a little bit of what you were just talking about too, which is it's a little bit of a trend thing in Richmond, but then you have the hardcore niche that, you know, are people who are always going to buy records and always have bought records and will continue to buy records. And it's really interesting to see how that mingles with people who are like, not to pick out like a business, but Capital One employees or something like that. That's just basically someone who works a job and doesn't go to art school and doesn't have this inclination to do these things, but do it now, you know?
And I think like there's a lot of people who just still like, they just never stopped, you know? Like, and a lot of people think like all of a sudden records got big and it's like, oh my God, they started making records again. It's like, no, it's not true. Like
they never went away.
Like some labels stopped pressing vinyl, but I mean, like, a lot of times like in the punk community and the indie rock community, they never stopped pressing records. Like people still bought them. I mean, you know, they'd only press 500 or 1,000, but they could sell them, they could move them. And it's never gone away and it never will. Like people are just interested in it. Like it has gotten to the point, like you were saying, Chris, where it's like the guy at Capital One's like, I'm into collecting records now, which is cool. Like I like gaining new guys, and you know, and you talk to them and it's great, you know, you can be like, hey, check this out, this is actually a really nice pressing of this record, it sounds really good, and they'll you know, and they're
be relatively open-minded.
Yeah But then you have the like the people have been doing it forever where they're kind of jaded but they still can't give it up, you know. They're still just like,
we know some of those people.
Whatever it is, I can't believe it's $28. I gotta buy it though. You know, I have to buy it.
I'll never listen to it.
I have to be in debt.
Yeah, no, I'll never even open it. I'm just gonna put it on the shelf because I have 8 copies of you know, Pet Sounds. But I gotta buy this new.
I don't have the mono. I've gotta have the mono
facet of the clientele.
Yeah.
Talk about some of the Record Store Day releases from the past that have kind of become major collector's items. Can you think of anything that?
That's pretty much like Typo Negative seems to be the only thing like that people are paying a lot of money for
really?
Some bizarre reason. I don't know why.
What was that?
Last year, like, or maybe the 2 years ago, like Typo Negative reissued like some record on vinyl. I don't think it ever came out on vinyl, and like I always see it still selling for like $400 or $500. I'm like, but you'll see all this other stuff where you have the Record Store Day speculators, you know, the guys who only come in once a year and they're like, I'm going to get this limited stuff and I'm going to put it on eBay immediately and get like $140 even though I paid $15 for it.
The gritty side of
It's the gritty side of the business.
I was wondering about that business.
But it's funny because a lot of that stuff, like, people will pay insane amount of money for, and then all of a sudden it's like you can find it a year later for like, you know, a quarter of the price, you know, like if you really want it.
Well, but it also shoots up the week after Record Store Day, so pretty much everything.
So you know you have to know how to play the market.
Funny, yeah.
You have to be a real gripper, you know, to like, you know, properly, you know, like utilize Record Store Day to your full potential.
That's
you know?
Yeah, it's a little bit like collecting baseball cards and speculating on rookies.
It's kind of like speculating. Yeah, well, it's kind of like baseball cards if this were like 1985. Right. Yeah. I don't think now anybody could.
No. Well, someone asked me just recently, like, what, you know, what, hey, man, what do you think the biggest seller will be? And, you know, and I think I probably responded that if I knew the answer to that, I wouldn't be in a record store. You know,
right.
I would be on Wall Street or something. I would be using that to actually like not have problems.
Yeah, I would seriously say that like I can never predict like things where I'm like, oh, I should order a lot of these if I can get them because people really want them. And then next thing you know, I'm, you know, for instance, like, you know, they're reissuing basically the whole Orange Juice catalog, and I'm like, you can get those records. They're around. They're like $10 or something, you know. And I'm like, you know, sometimes I'm looking for more, but I'm like, you know, like I'm reissuing, you know, they're reissuing that catalog or whatever. I'm like, I'll get a couple of them, and then that's the one that everyone keeps calling me about.
Yeah,
and emailing about, like, are you getting the Orange Juice reissue? I'm like, really?
Really?
I mean,
that's what you want.
Just on social media.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, basically. Yeah. Like, really? Okay. I mean, I should have probably ordered more, but like. You know, I just would never have guessed that would be like...
Yeah, there's no way of really knowing, it seems, you know? Because it also comes down to that this is an internet-based business, where in the past it was a billboard-based business. Mm-hmm. You know, there was at least some sort of authoritative voices and statuses that you could go by.
I've been talking with Marty Key from Steady Sounds Records. You can get extended info on Steady Sounds live events happening next weekend at steadysounds.com. We've also been talking with Chris Pittman from Deep Groove Records. You can find out more about the store and their record store day specials at deepgroovevinyl.com or their Facebook page. For complete information on the Record Store Day event, you can go to recordstoreday.com. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thank you.
And that's our show for Friday, April 12th. I'm Don Harrison, and my co-hosts are Amy Daniel and Chris Dovey. Our producers are Jay Westerman and Gabby Schatzi, and our board op is the lovely Some Dude. Mike McKenzie has been remixed and is now available on 12-inch. For links to podcasts of our previous shows and for breaking news, don't forget to log on at rvaopensource.com. There, for best results, you can observe the RIAA high-frequency roll-off characteristic with a 500-cycle crossover. Or, to put it another way, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Open Source RVA.